This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Trey Smith is number one. I like watching Landon Dickerson a lot. These are guys who I watch, Landon Dickerson a lot. And I've always watched Quentin Nelson even back in middle school. Their technique and how they play and how their bodies move. So Trey Smith is a guy who is a similar size to me. So I just seeing how he moves his body, seeing how he uses his body against certain guys. But you can't watch every single offensive lineman because they do things that you just can't do physically. So understanding that, you got to know who to watch.
Welcome back. It's Molly and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Molly out today. That was the voice of Tyler Booker, the Alabama guard, who had some things to say that were very appealing if you're looking for nasty offensive linemen. That was on CHGO. Tyler Booker now has ascended in the eyes of many Bears fans who like their linemen to come with a little bit of an edge. And that was a lot of fun to hear from him. Let's go out to our Aturo Hotline. The Score Hotline is brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. David Sivertson is from Our Lads. He's our guy in Indianapolis. David, thanks for joining us this morning. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Doing great. Long weekend, but this is the part of the process where the cream rises to the top. So I'm pedal to the metal to the end till May.
Love it, and really appreciate your insight. We're going to go through some guys whose impressions you may have of, and who may have left you with some opinions. Want to start though with Booker, because I think he's a guy that you look at and you wonder, boy, when you see an interior lineman, you think at number 10, the Bears wouldn't do that, would they? Because you've got to be Quentin Nelson-like or somebody of that ilk to go that high in the draft. And on the other hand, it's early. He could still ascend. What was your impression, and how do you rate Tyler Booker?
Well, I'm a little on the minority with Tyler Booker, and I might have to dodge some tomatoes being thrown at me here. But I had a day two grade coming into the weekend on Tyler Booker, and I left the weekend with the same exact impression. And I'll tell you what, the size and the physicality and the interview, I mean, we fall in love with interviews this time of year because he says all of the right things.
You're right.
And that Alabama coaching staff they do lift him up, anoint him as one of the best leaders they've ever had. And trust me, that does mean something to me. But that does not mean I'm going to put a first-round grade on him. And in today's NFL, I think one of the trends that I've seen with workouts, especially from the combine, and you have to be careful not to put too much or too little into it, but Tyler Booker's workout was very below average when you're talking about speed, movement, redirect, jumps, agility, and that is what I have as negatives on him on tape. Now, I still project him as a starter at the next level, but to me, he actually confirmed in my eyes that this is not a first-round pick. This is not a top-10 pick at all.
David, a lot of the reports come out, and they suggest that you could still find starting caliber interior offensive linemen at the top of the second round, maybe between 25 and 45. And I just wonder, with the Bears, that they picked 39 and 41, are you suggesting that might be a more likable or more maybe appropriate spot to pencil in a guy like Tyler Booker?
You're absolutely right. The gold mine, the secret is out. To find interior offensive linemen that you're very confident in that could start both early on and for a long time, it's in that top of second round area. Every single year, there's multiple guys that come out in that tier that are really high quality players. And to me, the mistake Chicago could make here is just simply reaching for a need. They're not a good enough team to try to find that one final piece. They just need to continue to stack great player after great player, hit singles and doubles in the draft. And to me, it's almost guaranteed you're going to like several players, not even just one or two, several players at both lines at the top of the second round.
One guy that CJ to like at the top of the first round, maybe at number 10 if he drops that far. Don't know if he will, but wonder what you think. Will Campbell had himself a weekend. I feel like the way he ran the 40, I don't know if it surprised some people, but it showed some people how athletic he can be. He's also a guy that has the dreaded short arms, according to a lot of measurements. What is your take on Will Campbell?
Will Campbell is similar to what we had Peter Skoronski with coming out of Northwestern a couple of years ago. He got drafted pretty high by Tennessee. He played left guard. And to me, Will Campbell is good enough to play tackle at the next level, so we can just put that out there. But I do think based on who drafts him, is that's where he'll end up. It's not just the arm length, however, though. The actual wingspan, how big this guy actually is, how broad he is really, I mean, you looked back 20 years of combine data when it comes to starting offensive tackles. He is almost off the radar small, so you have to be a little careful with just automatically labeling him the number one tackle. I'll tell you another name that I want Bears fans to do some work on in the coming months. It's Armand Membu from Missouri, 6'4", 332, no length concerns. He had the hardest pass rush schedule in terms of who he matched up against all year at Missouri this past season, and his grades in those games were his best games. That is a huge component to evaluating talent. How well do you play against the best level of competition? That's the guy that I would be zeroing in on at 10 overall.
That's great information, and that's a great homework assignment for a lot of Bears fans. How do you factor in those two guys we just mentioned with two of the other tackles that are often mentioned near the top of the first round, Josh Simmons and Kelvin Banks?
Kelvin Banks, to me, is probably a home run guard, and he might be a single or a double tackle. We've seen this with Tevin Jenkins. I think there's going to be some thoughts about Darnell Wright eventually moving in that direction if he doesn't pick it up in 2025. That's kind of the tier. That's the section I'm putting Kelvin Banks into. Josh Simmons, though, I've said this about him multiple times. The best left tackle tape I saw all year, and I've watched them all, I've watched every snap from all these guys, was Josh Simmons. It's just the fact that he didn't do it as often or as much because of the injury. And that patellar tendon injury, to me, that's a little bit more serious than the ACL, and that's going to cause some a little bit of concern. He didn't measure in exceptionally well either. So to me, those guys are both probably not going to be on options at 10 overall because I simply don't think they're going to grade out high enough. But I do think that you could do worse. Those guys are starting quality offensive linemen and at the next level. You just got to make sure you find the right spot and be patient with them, especially Simmons.
We're talking with David Sifferson from Our Lads here on Mullay and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Did any prospect in Indianapolis all week long have a better experience or help himself more than Shamar Stewart might have?
Oh, no. No, I mean, he is he's probably number one, and the number two would be the safety from South Carolina, Nick Emanuori. But Shamar Stewart, not only did he have impressive times and jumps, he looked great in drills, he's in rare territory. He's in Myles Garrett territory with testing. And those are numbers that I didn't think I would ever see again in scouting and evaluation. Shamar Stewart, he drops 10 to 15 pounds from the season, runs a 4.59, 40-inch vertical, 10.11 broad jump. For those that don't know, those are numbers are almost never seen at this kind of weight. And I'll tell you what, guys, this is the kind of workout that put Trevon Walker on the number one overall pick radar in 2022 to the Jacksonville Jaguars over Aiden Hutchinson. Now, probably not the best idea from Jacksonville, but these workouts do mean something now that the coaches and GMs are really trying to catch up to who these guys are. But he's going to be a fascinating study, and that his tools, they're going to make you drool. But his production was very lackluster in college, and we're going to see how much that actually matters draft weekend.
That's why I can't stop shaking my head as you talk, because I saw the same thing last week, and I was marveling at his speed and his combination in the 99th percentile and all these things. And then you look at the 4.5 sacks in 3 seasons. How does that happen, David?
Texas A&M, they have not had the best reputation for developing 5-star talent. And this kid was a 5-star. He was like a 5-star of 5-stars coming out of high school. I mean, this kid was gifted. I remember watching him as a freshman, and I'll write down guys just for future reference when someone pops off the screen that's not draft eligible. And he looked like an NFL defender as an 18-year-old freshman, but they just didn't develop some of the rush moves, and maybe there's some consistency. This is where all the background checking, the interviews, the interviewing of him and his coaching staff and his background, that's where you really have to kind of see Who is he? You never know who you have until he's in your building. And you can be talented all you want, but everyone in the NFL is talented. How much do you work at your craft? That's going to be probably the biggest question NFL teams need to figure out. Was it more him, or was it more the lackluster coaching staff at A&M?
Michigan's Mason Graham, known to be a hardworking guy, a guy who has worked for everything that he has accomplished. And I just wonder what kind of week he had and how far down you see him dropping.
Yeah, I can't see him escaping. I would say the top 12. I mean, I'm looking at Chicago and San Francisco being his absolute basement, and this would be a home run for Chicago. And I'll tell you what, this is the time of year where a guy like Mason Graham does start to fall a little bit, because we start to fall in love with the Shamar Stewart, top one percentile, the 40s. And, you know, this is a very pedestrian-looking guy, 6'3", 296, 32-inch arm, 78-inch wingspan. You know, he doesn't look like other guys. He looks like he's someone that would be going day three or even undrafted when you look at the profile, but you have to watch the tape. The tape rules all in evaluation. I think everything else is just about 20% of the process. But you know, it happens every year. You know, coaches and GMs, they fall in love with upside and potential, almost sometimes too much. And Mason Graham, to me, is probably the surest double you're going to hit in the draft. I don't know if he'll hit Aaron Donald's home run caliber level, but he's not going to crash and burn. He's going to help a team win. Chicago would be blessed to get him on that defensive line.
I just wonder, with all of the speculation and controversy surrounding Abdul Carter and the medicals that Adam Schefter reported, and the possibility of him needing surgery, then Drew Rosenhaus saying he's going to avoid surgery, just wait for the pro day. How do you factor that into your own evaluation, and how do you see that situation unfolding?
Man, I mean, it really, I hate to say it, but it's going to be a flip of the coin. And what bothers me, it's not the shoulder, it's the foot. That because this guy, his game, 90% of his game is about get off and bend. And especially when he has that bone issue on the outside of his foot, those guys really need to plant that outside of the foot when they turn the corner at the top of the rush. And that's a huge part of his game. I would think that's probably over 50% of what makes him such a dangerous player. And it does cause some concern, but this is what the NFL draft is, guys. There's no such thing as a sure thing. Anyone that tells you different doesn't know what they're talking about. And at some point, you're going to have to kind of take some risk management into your decision-making and say, hey, we're going to swing for the fence here, or we're going to pass on him, just like everybody passed on Micah Parsons, and now you're kicking yourself year after year. So it's a tough decision. I think part of it is going to be get to know Abdul Carter as a person. If he is really determined to get back healthy ASAP, but also do it the right way, you're going to be confident you're getting a premier pass rusher. And those guys are really hard to find in the NFL, and they can change your team. So if you fall in love with the person through all this background checking, I say no question you go for it. It won't impact my grade at all.
For different reasons, a cloud hangs over Mike Green, the Marshall edge rusher, because he was very open and transparent about addressing the sexual assault allegations that he faced at Virginia, which landed him at Marshall. He's somebody who has amazing ability and upside, David, but I just wonder how that might affect the way teams view him and how important then his interviews become.
Yeah, I mean, his interviews are probably, I mean, they were the most important part of the weekend because he didn't work out. I mean, he did the bench press, but actually had a really impressive bench press number. But yeah, the off-the-field stuff, especially when it comes to sexual assault, and there are some teams that it's a moral issue if you really want to bring something like that into your club. But also, it could be a moral issue in giving a kid a second chance and knowing that everyone does make mistakes. But some teams do weigh this more than others, and that's what makes predicting the NFL draft impossible, because it comes down to 32 different opinions, and you know, you get five opinions in the same room, they're not going to be the same. And Mike Green, to me, it's not about making a mistake that crosses you off. It's how do you respond to making the mistake? You know, do you own it? Do you take ownership of these mistakes and do you move forward, or do you constantly deflect and not man up to making a mistake? So that's going to be answered in those private interviews.
Talking with David Sifferson from Our Lads about the NFL Combine in Indianapolis last week. Let's look at running backs. Ashton Jeanty met with the Bears. He's a guy that has been speculated could be top of the first round possibility. I also love the fact that you looked like were impressed by Quinshon Judkins from Ohio State, somebody who made an impression. How deep is this running back class, and who do you think is at the top of it?
Deepest running back class I've ever had. And I've been doing this with Our Lads for 13 years now. And I've never seen a group quite like this. And I'll tell you what, it's at the top of the draft, these first round pick. I have three or maybe even four first round grades, but also rounds 3, 4, 5, you're getting guys that have legitimate starter grades. And know, I love how the 2024 NFL season started to bring back the running back. And I really do think that got a little overplayed by media and fans, that running backs can always be found, but they're not that important. They're vital to a winning football team. And yes, they can be found in any part of the draft, but so can, you know, Tom Brady was found in the sixth round. You know, so let's not overlook the importance of how good these players are. And the Ashton Jeanty going to the Bears in the first round, I think, is on the table, but I don't think it would be the smartest decision, because I'll tell you what, he is not the automatic number one guy across the league. Omarion Hampton from North Carolina, he's right there with him. He was one of the winners of the weekend. I mean, this dude is 4'4", 6'40" at 221 pounds with a 10-10 broad jump. This is Saquon Barkley type territory. And Quinshon Judkins, he had an 11-foot broad jump that ranked number one among all backs, third among all backs and receivers at 221 pounds, and his tape backs it up. This dude was approaching Herschel Walker territory in the SEC as a true freshman at Mississippi. I mean, you can go down the list of guys and say, hey, we're going to add to this backfield. It's really, you got to answer the question, what kind of back do you want? Do you want a pass catcher, a speed guy, a between-the-tackles bruiser? You will be able to find one of these guys for the first five rounds, no question.
Coming to talk about running backs, got to ask you about Cam Scataboo. He also met with the Bears. Is a guy that helped himself with a vertical that I don't think people expected, 39 inches. He's a good athlete. Where do you think he falls, and how good of a week did he have?
Yeah, I mean, day two for me, Cam Scataboo, he didn't do most of the workouts. He didn't get any of the on-field drills, but I'll tell you what, I'll look forward to his pro day, but he's a day two back all day to me. I actually wrote him up right after I wrote up Ashton Jeanty, and I said this in my report. I was like, his running style is exceptionally close to Jeanty when it comes to contact balance, running low to the ground, and I don't think there's a back in this class that loves and craves contact more than him. And I don't know if I want him carrying the ball 25 times a game because of how violent he plays, but this is the kind of guy that you put in the backfield in the second half of a game when you have a lead and you're just going to wear down the defense. I mean, he's an annoying guy to play against because he's going to inflict pain on you as you try to tackle him. That's the kind of guy I like to get day two and combine with DeAndre Swift.
Somewhere Bears fans are smiling because they love the idea of that guy in a Bears uniform. That would be fun.
Absolutely.
So
that would be fun.
Did Travis Hunter do anything to make teams more definitive about what position he will play? And do you think that he has one direction he should take, or should he leave both options open?
I mean, both options open, and I think the one thing he did do is that he was labeled a cornerback at the start of the combine, and he actually made it a job for himself to say, no, I am not a corner, I am playing both. That he is pretty adamant about it. It's not just something to kind of make him look like Shohei Ohtani, the football version. He genuinely thinks he should be playing on both sides of the ball. And I'll tell you what, in today's NFL, I actually like him at wide receiver more than I do corner. I think he could be special at both, but obviously I don't think he could be full-time on both sides of the ball. But Travis Hunter, to me, is kind of a better version of Garrett Wilson in terms of body type, speed, ball tracking, and what he can do after the catch. I would sign for that right now and let him be a rotational cornerback, because that's a little bit easier, in my opinion, to control snaps if you can be a nickel dime package defender, which is a base defense of today's NFL. So I think Travis Hunter is surprising how many people, how adamant he is that he is not a one side player. You're going to put him on both sides of the ball. And that actually gives me some hesitation with some teams. Are they even capable of doing that? You need to have really good brain power, really good leadership to come up with the right role for him. And I think only a few teams in the NFL have proven they are capable of doing something like that.
I personally am not overly impressed with Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders as far as being top five kind of guys, maybe top overall kind of guys. But that's a debate maybe for another day. I'm just curious, was there a third quarterback that might have helped himself to get closer to the first round, like so many do, it seems, every single year?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, I mean, Jackson Dart, to me, he just had the most consistent, steadiest ball placement on the most difficult throws on the throwing drills. And that, to me, I mean, he still remains my QB3, and he's right there with Shedeur Sanders, to be honest with you. I think Cam Ward's a little above both those guys. But Dart, to me, I love his build. I love his ability to throw the ball deep. I love the competitive nature. But there really weren't many quarterbacks. The one that kind of stood out to me in terms of, wow, this looks better than what I saw on tape, was Riley Leonard from Notre Dame. And this is a guy that played through the national championship, goes right to the Senior Bowl when everyone else is backing out of it, and then he goes to the combine. He actually had a really good week. The kid is such a competitive guy, and I don't think we're seeing a starter in him at some point, but you do want quality backups at the next level for both intellectually and physically, and I think that's what Riley Leonard brings to the table.
Before I let you go, what do you think is more likely to happen? Three quarterbacks go in the top 10 or one quarterback go in the top 10?
Wow, that's a great question. We got to make a betting market for that. Man, that is a tough question. I don't see three going. So I'm going to go with I'd be more surprised to see three go that high, because right now my number is two. But the more I see and the more I read and the more people I talk to, this is such a defensive-heavy draft, and the quarterback draft in next year's crop does look like it's going to be significantly better than what we have right now. I do think the Sam Darnold, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, those shoes need to drop, and that's going to really help us figure out what that top 10 will look like. But to me, Cam Ward is a lock for the top 10. And personally, I have a second-round grade on Shedeur Sanders and Jackson Dart. And I think some of the league, even though quarterback demand is so high in the NFL in general, there's just a lot of reasons why I think that the teams will look elsewhere or try to find a day-two guy or punt on quarterback till next year.
David Siverson,
my answer is going to be one.
From Owlets, thank you so much for joining us. Great stuff this morning.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
That's David Siverson from Our Lads. When we come back, shifting gears, going out to Arizona, our guy Bruce Levine will bring us up to date the latest on Matt Shaw and the White Sox. Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce asked the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mully is out today. Time now to go out to a score hotline brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Out in Arizona, he covers baseball like nobody else. He is the Score's baseball expert. Bruce Levine, good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, David, and the Oscar for the best new performance by a third baseman will go to, we hope, Matt Shaw.
Good old number 77. Yeah, Bruce, working on getting him a new number. What's the possibility? Can you get him a new number? Can you work on that?
Well, Council already gave away his number. that went to Tucker. Armstrong got a new number this year. He's wearing number 4. We'll have to work on it.
Yeah, please okay? do. I'm very
Maybe
concerned
about
the
number. Maybe someone will have to be sent
to AAA. Ooh. All right, let's start with Matt Shaw. He makes his debut for the spring yesterday. 0-for-3, popped out with the bases loaded. Seemed to have fun, seemed to have no pain, Bruce. And also, you know, they leave a week from tomorrow for Japan. How do you see this unfolding? What did you think of the first time out for Matt Shaw?
Well, I thought he was relaxed. He looked like... Excuse me, David. He was having fun out there. And Chicago people are really going to like this guy. I know you've had a chance to talk to him once or twice, and I've talked to him all spring and before that. He's just a real centered young man who expects to be good, works hard at it. I will be surprised if he's not a good major league player. Is he going to be a good third baseman? That's the thing we don't know about. Is he going to Japan? Is it important for him to stay back, work on repetitions, knowing that he started 3 weeks behind, and instead of going there and playing 2 exhibition games and 2 major league games, is it better that he stays back here and does the work that he needs to do to improve at third base? I think it's a no-brainer, except you don't want to punish a guy for... the fact that, you know, he's not going with the team the first time.
What's the no-brainer? What's the no-brainer?
The no-brainer is he stays.
That's not a no-brainer. You can make the argument that he should go. He's 23 years old, Bruce. I mean, we don't need to talk about this trip to Japan like is getting in a space shuttle launch. It's a trip abroad. It's a trip to Japan. What's the no-brainer part of it?
Getting his work in, being ready for the regular season. Okay, so... you're spending an entire day in travel, right? Okay. Then the jet lag coming back, right? And then the fact that, you know, he could be here playing in games, working with the infield instructors on his throwing, which is a major concern and the major issue as to whether he's going to be a really good third baseman or not. The guy is not afraid to work. He'll work hard. He wants to go, obviously.
Sure.
Made a case for it yesterday when he talked to us after the game. I'm not into punishing anybody. I'm just saying, you know, what's realistic here, David, as far as workload and getting prepared for the regular season?
I think it's more debatable than you make it sound, but I don't even think it's that big of an issue. It is two games out of 162, and you'd like to see him get off to a good start regardless of whether he's in Japan or makes his debut in the domestic opening day, or maybe Iowa, as you suggest. You think how likely is that to be the desired outcome for the Cubs?
I don't think so. I mean, if he's – look, he said, you know, right now Council is going to play him every other day here to get his legs under him ready for the regular season. He said, hey, I'm ready to play every single day, okay? I'm ready to go. This guy's not going to AAA. He's going to start the season as the Cubs' third baseman. Again, the only question is repetitions at third base. The throw is brand new. He doesn't have your typical third baseman throw at this point. So he's working on the skills that he needs to use his legs and his arms. His arm to be able to function properly at that position.
Those are good points. Those are excellent points. That adjustment is not to be taken for granted maybe as quickly as we sometimes are taking that for granted. Let's look at other guys who may not be on the opening day roster. Very curious what the future holds, maybe short and long term, and what the Cubs think about Ben Brown and Jordan Wicks. Are these guys going to be on the opening day roster, and what will they be in terms of – will they be part of the pitching rotation? Because you're running out of room.
It's a really good thing, isn't it, David? For the first time in how many years are we talking about a Chicago team's rotation possibly being outstanding at AAA, right, with depth? I mean, can you imagine Brown and Wicks being your 1-2 at AAA? Not as punishment, but the fact is that they're that deep right now in their rotation. And Colin Ray, is a guy that, a veteran guy that might slot into the five spot with Javier Assad starting the season on the IL. That's a really good thing, and it's something that Hoyer and Hawkins worked hard on in the offseason to add depth to this team, going out there, signing free agents, making trades. I really like the idea that Brown and Wicks might start there, and they both have really good attitudes about it. They'll pitch in the bullpen. They don't care. They want to start. They understand if they start at AAA, they're not going to stay there. Injuries will happen. Attrition will happen. They will be major leaguers, and besides that, they have experience from 2024 pitching for the Cubs on the big team. So from that perspective, I really like where they're at.
I really enjoyed your interview on Saturday inside the clubhouse with Ryan McGuffey of Carson Kelly, the veteran catcher in Cubs camp. What role is he playing in terms of helping Miguel Amaya, or is it the other way around, Bruce, because of Amaya's familiarity with this staff? Can he help Carson Kelly acclimate quickly so he can be an asset?
Yeah, I mean, Kelly is a natural leader, and he's a communicator. He's a good defensive catcher. He's got power. I look for him to catch, 60, 70 games, let Amaya catch, 90, 100 games, and be really strong there. Both guys have power. Amaya is looking really good offensively in camp here, continuing on where he left off last year and having a very good last 2 months of the season after learning a toe tap as far as his batting stance goes from Craig Counsell. So I think they're in really good shape, maybe as good a shape as they've been in a long time, maybe going back to 23 with Gomes and Amaya starting out at that point. They have the ability to get 20 home runs, 25 home runs from the catching spot, 70 to 80 RBI with good defense behind the plate. I think that's ideal.
Cubs take on the Diamondbacks today in spring training action from Mesa. Zach Zaidman, Ron Coomer on the call, starting at 2. Cubs spring training games on the Score, sponsored by Sloan, the leader in smart water and commercial restroom solutions. All right, Bruce, let's look at the White Sox. Davis Martin had a pretty good day on Sunday. We tend to overlook his return. He just seems to have been there a very long time. I know he's still a pretty young man, but what role do you see him playing in the Sox rotation this year?
I think he's the third starter. You know, I think it's Cannon, Perez, Martin, Burke. That's the top four I'm looking at right now. People forget how well he pitched a few years ago before he had Tommy John and came back last year through 11 games. He's a really smart guy. He understands his role. I think people are going to be surprised by what they get out of Davis Martin this year.
How about Martin Perez telling CHSN that the Sox are contenders? I know what he's saying, Bruce. I know you need a guy who's full of positivity, optimism, and confidence in your rotation. He's a veteran who has been on some legit contenders. What was he aiming for with that comment, and what role will he play?
Well, the role he plays is a good starting pitcher every 5 days until the trading deadline where he gets traded. You hope that that's the situation, but the leadership is real. You know, I've talked to this guy extensively since SoxFest, and he's not a BSer, okay? He's a guy that legitimately believes that positive thinking and being a good teammate go hand in hand in a day-to-day operation of getting better. He understands his role with this team. He's not afraid to go in there, be a leader, and also face the reality that in come August 1st, he's pitching somewhere else. I think you need guys like that. It's a little bit over the top saying you're going to be a contender, but I certainly admire the way he goes about it.
Bruce, I want to know what you can tell me about Grant Taylor, because I want him to make the Sox. He throws 102, but that might not be the most impressive thing about him. According to WhiteSox.com, he once solved Rubik's Cube in 25 seconds. If you got a guy who's that much of a thinking man's pitcher on the mound, I think he's got a future. What do you think?
I think he's a future assistant general manager. I mean,
25 seconds.
Smart, if he's that smart, you know, you want him to be the first pitcher front office guy in the history of baseball, right? So he does both. On the days he doesn't pitch, he's up there with Getz and the rest of the guys trying to figure it out. It would be really fun. No, but he's got a great arm. It's fun to watch some of these young guys develop and the ability they have. The White Sox do have really good young pitching. You hope you see the maturity and the development in guys like Cannon this year and Burke and Iarte and a lot of the others. So that's the big hope for the Chicago White Sox this year is the young pitching staff.
In the time it took you to answer that question, he solved Rubik's Cube. That's how fast he is. All right, Bruce, on Saturday, the Sox scored 18 runs. We speculated during the pick six if they would score 18 runs in their four regular season games at the end of the month, as they did on March 1st. Luis Robert Jr. homered. Do you think that he will or won't be part of the team when they open against the Angels on March 27th?
I do not have an answer for that because teams are looking at him. General managers are trying to decide if it's worth the risk of giving three top young players for a guy that hit 38 home runs 2 years ago, one of the top defensive players in center field in the game, a guy that the White Sox had to stop from running the bases and trying to steal last year because he was so aggressive. There's a million things in the world to be excited about with Luis Robert Jr. I guess Sox fans are concentrating on whether that's going to be for them watching him this year as a White Sox player or bringing back three more good young players. I can't answer it. They're wide open to this right now, but some general managers are just hesitating because of the multiple injuries that he's had, especially two in the same area.
Before I let you go, Bruce, near the end of last week, Colson Montgomery was a late scratch with back spasms. It's not something you want to linger. It is something he's dealt with before. I wonder, how big of an issue do you think this is becoming? Is he still slated to be given every opportunity to be the opening day shortstop?
Yes, he is. He's going to be the everyday shortstop. He's made the adjustments at shortstop to do the routine play routinely there. So they're very happy about that. The back issue, you hope, is not something that curtails this at all. Remember, every spring, you know, going back years ago, is Kerry Woods back. Every spring, going back with Anthony Rizzo. So you hope that it's just some minor adjustment that he just has to go through and deal with. He's dealt with it once before, came back rather quickly.
30 seconds, Bruce. Did you see Bob Nightingale's story on Sammy Sosa this morning? You have any opinion on that?
I did not. I don't know what he said. I saw him talking to him here, but I don't know. All I can tell you is Sammy wants to be involved with the Cubs, but he told me flat out, he said, I'm waiting for them to tell me what they want me to do. I'm not being the aggressor here. I'm just thrilled to be back with the Cubs.
You can find Bruce's stuff on 670thescore.com, and he will be with us all week from Arizona. Thank you very much, Bruce, for your time. Have a great day.
David, take care, buddy.
Bruce Levine out in Arizona, the Score's baseball expert, talking Cubs and White Sox. When we come back, Bulls, Arturis Karnišovas had some stuff to say on the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast. Interesting stuff about the future and what does it hold for Io DeSunmu. We'll talk about it next. It's Molly and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's hard for me to judge right now, you know, because season started, everybody said it's strong. Now it's kind of, well, I'm not sure if it's strong. Usually I focus on getting through the combine, getting through player workouts, going through intel, going through medical information, and then kind of getting an idea what the draft is going to look like. So I think it's early, but next two drafts probably are, you know, pretty good, and I know we're going to add a good player.
Welcome back. It's Molly and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Molly out today. That was Arturis Karnišovas on the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast, talking about this year's draft class, which everybody is enamored with, even though after the top three, I do wonder if there's a significant drop-off, and I wonder if it is as good as everybody thought it was going to be at the beginning of the season. And then next year's draft class, the Bulls are going to be in position, ideally, to be drafting high. They're going to be in the muck this year. We don't know because the percentage points are undetermined. They won Friday. They lost Sunday. And they play again tomorrow night against the Cavs. The schedule gets a little tougher. You wonder where the Bulls will be. You wonder what direction they're headed, frankly. And I think that it's been unclear and it's been difficult to discern exactly what direction they're headed. We know they wanted to draft as high as possible, but then you got guys like Coby White going out and having a four-point play with 6 seconds to go to win the game in overtime on Friday night, which was fun. It was great drama. That was fantastic basketball. I don't know how you don't love that unless you're rooting for them to lose, and I get it. And all the guys rooting for them to lose, I get it. They get it. They know it. Josh Giddey addressed it. But it's still fun when it happens. That's sports, man. That's sports. AK was also asking and talking about this kind of duality, wanting to get younger, but also wanting to win. Billy Donovan has talked so well about this throughout the season and to the point where he just says all the right things at all the right times. But AK took a stab during the Give Me the Hot Sox podcast.
We all understand where we are in transition period, right? And we communicated that after last year, and our trades, our moves indicated that we, you know, we got younger, but with our vision ahead, vision to the future. And what we try to do is, how do you minimize the timeline of that transition, right? So, and I think by having players that played 6, 5, 4 years in the league, I think that kind of like, it doesn't set you back too far, you know? And that was the idea of, you continue drafting guys and getting, you know, talent while you have young team, but that young team has players that already played 6, 5, 4 years in the league. And, you know, that, and then you look to build on that. Like after the season, I think we're going to focus on the draft in 2025. I know we're going to get a good player. Then the free agency in 2025. And then 2026 draft is going to be pretty good as well. And then 2026 free agency. we've committed to only a fraction of our salary cap. Salary cap projected to be $170 million in 2026, and we committed only $45 million as of right now. So it's that's how we look, you know, ahead of like 18 months plan to see this team developing, and we'll see how that's going to pan out.
That's AK on the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast. Stacey King, Mark Schanowski did a terrific job of getting the Bulls executive vice president to state his goals. Also, they had some good stuff about just his career. That was a really good episode, so you want to check that out. It definitely, you can find it on the Odyssey app as well. AK clarifying as best he can what direction they want to go. Right now, as we sit here this morning, the Bulls on tankathon.com, forget about the Eastern Conference seedings where they still are in the play-in round. They're the eighth worst team in basketball. They've got a 6% chance of getting the number one overall pick and a 26.3% chance of being in the top four. They are just ahead of the San Antonio Spurs, which are two-game difference there, and they have a 20% chance. The Spurs are ninth. The Sixers, who ruled Joel Embiid out for the season, are at number seven with a 32% chance of being in the top four and a 7.5% chance of being the top overall pick. They are at 21-38. So that is some ground to cover and to close, but anything is possible if you try hard enough to be bad enough, I suppose. Bulls are playing better, though. That's the thing. They played well against the Pacers. They just ran out of steam against a playoff team. They were on the road, and Halliburton was not having it. And in the fourth quarter, the Pacers pulled away. Bulls can be entertaining. They can be maddening to some people. They still are very entertaining at times, as they were Friday night at home in beating the Raptors. Cavaliers come to town tomorrow night. That'll be fun. I think the Struce will be, Max Struce will be on the loose. Check that out because he is a local guy made good. It's always fun when he comes back to town, even though he's wearing a Cavalier uniform. It's always fun to see Max Struce, a pride of the Paul.
Put that Struce juice in it and knock it back.
Struce juice for everybody tomorrow night. That'll be fun. It's also going to be fun. We're going to talk to Cam Smith, my colleague at the Chicago Sports Network, who knows the Bulls as well as anybody in town. He's going to be coming up here at 9 o'clock. Get some more thoughts on the Bulls and what happened over the weekend and what's going to happen ahead of this draft and how deep is this draft. Cam knows as much about basketball in the city as anybody that I know. And we'll look at that in terms of what the Bulls' goals are down the stretch and the future without Io. What's going to happen to Io over the summer? Does this shoulder surgery that was announced on Sunday affect his trade value? And just who else is going to be dangled? Why isn't Modest playing down the stretch? What's wrong with Modest Bazell said he's not playing in crunch time? All right, that's Cam Smith from the Chicago Sports Network when we come back. But don't forget, right now, the Score, listen to this, is giving you a chance to win a trip to Florida for the ultimate college basketball viewing experience. March 20th to 23rd, Odyssey's Buckets and Bets at Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, Florida, is your destination for tip-off weekend. Enter now. Here's the keyword. Listen, the keyword assist at 670thescore.com for your chance to win. Enter with the keyword assist, A-S-S-I-S-T, at 670thescore.com for your chance to win. All right, more Bulls talk when we come back. Cam Smith from the Chicago Sports Network will join us. It's Mully and Haw. Mully out today. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.